Sarah, the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
So we now have surveillance footage of the domestic terrorist attack of the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. And it shows just how serious this act of violence actually was. An act that was justified by a whole bunch of progressives. An act that we were told by Antifa supporters and Antifa themselves. Oh, it wasn't violent. It wasn't dangerous at all. This was a guy who wasn't there with the intent of hurting anybody. So it happened last month. What was it? July 13th? Happened around 4 a.m. 69-year-old Willem Van Sponsen. He was there armed with a rifle, throwing incendiary devices at vehicles, at a building. And in the surveillance video that has now been put out there, you can see a car on fire. You can hear them, officers, shouting at this guy before a lot of gunshots are exchanged. As Tacoma PD had to encounter this lunatic. And the images, dramatic. The audio, dramatic. Now, of course, Willem Van Sponsen ended up dying from his wounds. This should be considered a domestic terrorist attack. It's exactly what it is. The guy used his insane political beliefs to justify this violence. He was committing this horrendous act, all in the name of pursuing his personal political positions. Now, he was considered and called a hero by Antifa organizations, by progressives who are anti-Trump, progressives who push their open border policy. They look at this guy and they justify it. They justify it. And it's part of a very dangerous strategy by these ideologues. And it goes hand in hand with what we've been talking about for the past several weeks, where you've got people who actively call you a Nazi or a white supremacist solely because you disagree with their political beliefs. I was called a Nazi because I decided to come out and say, yeah, Antifa violence is wrong. Now, in their world, Antifa violence is justified. And if you get in the way of Antifa, it means you are in favor of fascism, which means you're a white supremacist and a Nazi, and they deserve to be hurt. That's what they believe. They dehumanize people to justify the violence against them. They claim that what we have going on at the border is a concentration camp, several of them. And they promise never again in our history would we allow this to happen to people as it happened to Jews. And they use that to justify their violence. Now, of course, there's irony in all of this. Because the same exact voices who are saying never again generally side with Hamas, a terrorist organization, generally hold anti-Semitic views in their support of BDS, but they'll, of course, happily say never again in reference to the Holocaust to exploit Jewish history for their own political gain. You have some people out there who are literally stalking and doxing folks who work in immigration enforcement, whether we're talking about border agents or private companies who work for groups like the GEO Group, which provides private services to the federal government as it relates to immigration enforcement. We played this audio earlier on in the week. Remember, in Florida, in Broward County, these lunatics were going after someone who works for the GEO Group, and they were threatening him, and they were threatening his family.
When immigrant bodies are under attack, what do we do?
We know where all
the
children live throughout the country.
We know where all your children live throughout the country.
John Bolton, you have kids in... You have kids in...
Those are the addresses of the schools that they are at.
Everything about you, and you won't just be seeing us here.
We know where you sleep at night.
We know where you sleep at night.
Actually joking. John Bolton, you go to... church and...
They're not joking. This is dangerous. And every single day that we don't condemn it is another day that they feel empowered to do this kind of nonsense, former acting ICE director John Torres, who served under the Obama administration, was talking about this rhetoric and warning people against it on Fox News.
Not only that's not how it is, but it's you're not getting all the facts out there, especially when they complain, when people complain and say ICE agents are violating people's human rights or ICE agents are holding people in terrible conditions. But the fact is, what doesn't get out there is how they have the highest of detention standards or all the different policies that are in place to ensure that they're being professional and compassionate. And so you're really getting a small portion of the picture, and a lot of that is election rhetoric.
Well, and he talked specifically to Fox and Friends about the doxing of ICE officials that's happening right now.
It's horrific. It's disgusting. It's borderline criminal harassment, actually potentially terroristic threats. We're not talking about peaceful protests here. We're not talking about people that organize, gather, protest in front of an ICE building or protest by marching on the Washington Mall. They're actually resorting to violence and terroristic threats, and they should be arrested for that.
They should, but they're not going to be because they have a lot of people on their side, and they just happen to be working for the Democratic Party to get the nomination for president. The people who are out there who are campaigning are encouraging this. They are enabling this kind of disgusting behavior, all while they talk about the dangerous rhetoric coming from the president. This is going to get someone killed, and we're lucky that the only person who was killed in Tacoma in all of this was the monster terrorist who decided to put officers' lives on the line when he brought that rifle and the incendiary devices to the Northwest Detention Center. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So we talked yesterday about Israel denying anti-Semitic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib a permission slip, as it were, to visit the country during an overseas trip that she had planned. The overseas trip was intended to demonize Israel, to demonize Jews, because it turns out when you're an anti-Semite going to Israel under the guise of an actual important trip that just happens to be funded and backed by people who don't like Israel or Jews, in other words, another anti-Semitic organization, nothing good will come of that. So not content with the 5 minutes where some folks in the media wanted to pretend that Tlaib was somehow a victim in all of this, even though it is against the law in Israel to visit while also supporting the destruction of the country, which is what Tlaib actually believes, she decided to try to push things a little bit more in her corner to make it seem like she's a victim. And oh my gosh, did it backfire. She writes a letter to Israeli officials and she was asking permission for her to visit her older grandmother, who I believe is 90 years old, visit her in the West Bank. And she promised in this letter to the Israeli officials that, oh, I promise I'm not going to use this as a means to promote a boycott, to try to call out the country. I just want to visit my old grandmother, because who knows? She could be dead tomorrow. She could die of old age. And I want at least one more time, one more chance to visit her. And so Israel granted it. And then, of course, Rashida Tlaib then uses that, tweets out a whole bunch of crap, saying she would love to go, but you know what? She can't do it because she's not going to be used to promote oppression and racism by the Israeli government. This backfired so poorly for her because everyone knew exactly what she was doing. This was all a publicity stunt. Now, anti-Semites would do something with this and use it to attack Israel, which is exactly what she does, what she's doing. She's using this to attack Israel. She is an anti-Semite. It's not that she's anti-Israel and anti-Israeli policies. She is against the existence of the Israeli state. She supports Hamas because she does not view them as terrorists. She views them as freedom fighters fighting against the evil oppressors of Israel. This is a deeply bigoted woman. Deeply bigoted. And I think everything that we've seen over the course of the last couple days and how she's using this stunt, a clear stunt, to go after Israel just highlights that point even stronger. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. So a Seattle officer with depression self-medicated with legal marijuana, and when he came forward to the SPD, after they offered him rehab, they ended up firing him. It was an exclusive story we had yesterday. If you want to help shine a spotlight on it, it's the focus of my current blog. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join me in backing the blue, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk about movies thanks to our sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. Good Boys is out now, and it's a very R-rated comedy featuring tweens. And because they're all 12, 13 years old, swearing up a storm throughout the entire movie, producer Seth Rogen sets up the trailer this way.
Hey, kids. As you know, I am one of the producers on your movie, Good Boys, and unfortunately, I'm here with bad news. You guys cannot watch the trailer for your own movie.
What? Are you
Come
serious?
On.
Are you kidding?
It's just too messed up for kids your age. There's drugs, there's violence, there's swearing, and although we've decided it's okay for you to do these things in the movie, you can't watch yourselves do them in the trailer. Oh, it is f***ed up.
Yeah.
You can say that, but you can't watch yourself say that.
So Good Boys is about three best friends in sixth grade trying to learn how to kiss before a kissing party that night, but they get in trouble when they use a drone to spy on their neighbors in an effort to see how kissing is done.
We're sorry. We just wanted to learn how to kiss.
We'll kiss. It's none of their business.
We should have just told the truth. We're going to a kissing party, and none of us have ever kissed, and we're scared.
Lucas, I've had sex before, but I've never kissed a girl. Look, can we please have the drone back? If you don't give it back, I'll tell my dad you stole it.
And I'll tell him that you're a pervert.
We'll tell the whole school.
This is sensual harassment.
We'll tell everyone that you're a misogynist.
I never massaged anyone.
This is what happens when you don't respect women.
I respect women. My mom's my best friend.
What about me?
So ultimately, it becomes a movie about friendships and bonds and really growing apart. And despite the vulgar jokes, and by the way, they're very funny vulgar jokes, this film is like weirdly charming and utterly adorable. This is a comedy with heart, and if you take away all of the F-bombs, it's still a sweet movie. The three lead characters absolutely make this film. When you've got kid actors, they usually make or break a movie, and each of them is unique, oddly complex, and really fun to watch. The clever part about this movie, these are genuinely good kids. Despite what some might think based upon all of their swearing, these characters are literally good boys. They view drug use as immoral. One is disgusted by abortion. They're disgusted by sex, ironically. This movie would be good for sixth graders. But it's R-rated, so they actually can't see it alone. The rating is based almost exclusively on language. Beyond that, I'd say it's actually appropriate for 13-year-olds. Just know that there's legitimately a ton of cussing in this movie. I absolutely loved Good Boys, and I highly recommend it. The other movie out right now is based on the wildly popular book, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? It's about a Seattle-based quirky architect trying to survive in a world where she stopped being creative. She stopped creating the brilliant work that she's known for, and as a result, it's taken a toll not just on her life, but also her family, threatening to tear her marriage apart.
You know, what LG doesn't know is that I am still obsessing about LA.
What do you mean?
You know, just last night, right? I woke up to pee. You know, I'm half asleep, I'm a blank slate, and then the data starts reloading. It's Bernadette Fox, 20 Mile House, destroyed, failed.
Yeah.
And it's like failure has got its teeth in me, and it won't stop shaking.
You done?
Yeah.
Yeah, good, because I know you can't honestly believe any of this nonsense. As amusing as it is, it obscures the larger point, which is that people like you must create. That's what you were brought into this world to do, Bernadette. If you don't, you become a menace to society. I think there's one very simple answer to all of your problems. Get your ass back to work and create something.
Unfortunately, this movie is an absolute chore to watch. The performances, I think, are mostly strong, but the movie feels aimless and weirdly lifeless at times. It's a comedy where you don't actually laugh. It feels like it wants to be this whimsical comedy, but there's no whimsy. There's no actual comedy. And consequently, you end up not really caring as much about their struggles as you probably should. I mean, is Bernadette quirky or is she mentally ill? That's a legitimate question. Should we feel good about a relationship with her daughter, which is her biggest fan, worried about her future? Why is this movie being made exactly? What exactly is it trying to say? These are questions I kept asking myself during the movie, and I still don't have an answer. It feels directionless, but also cluttered. There's no surprises. And at times, I felt the story to be incoherent. I just didn't understand some of the scenes. I haven't read the book, but people who have say this movie is completely mishandled based upon the source material. And it kind of feels that way. And I'm saying that from the perspective of a guy who didn't actually read the book. It feels mishandled. Where'd You Go, Bernadette? It's out right now. It's a total mess, and I do not recommend it. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Another film coming out this weekend is Blinded by the Light. We're actually going to talk about the film from the perspective of the guy who not just wrote it, but wrote it based on his own life. Sansour Mansour is going to stop by at 5:30. But before that, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So Amazon just opened a new brick and mortar storefront in Seattle yesterday. This is the next step of Amazon sort of taking over the entire world. I mean, like, should we just submit at this point to them? The whole complaint when Amazon.com started to grow were traditional brick and mortar stores saying, oh, you're killing us. We can't compete. And so they weren't able to fully kill everybody. So now they're directly competing by creating their own brick and mortar storefront. It's called the Amazon 4-Star Show. And it's just what it sounds like. They only sell items that carry 4 stars or more. Janine Takala is an Amazon spokesperson. She spoke with our sister station, Cairo Radio, and said it's basically an Amazon's most wanted store.
The idea is that customers know when they come into this store, any product they select, it's going to be something that's already highly rated and beloved by customers like them.
And so this is absolutely brilliant. So right now, when you go to a Best Buy, for example, do you go there for usually one or two particular items? Maybe you've already done some of your research. You go in there and you know what you're getting. Well, Amazon already has all the research behind the scenes. They know exactly what you want to buy because they see what's being purchased on Amazon.com. They've collected all of that data and they can parse it out even regionally. So they know the items in, say, the Seattle area, Tacoma, Bellevue, the metro area. They know what's going to be purchased. So rather than buying a whole bunch of space to include 10,000 items, they're able just to carry a handful of very specific items that they know you're going to buy rather than have them just kind of hanging out on the shelves, no one buying them like you find in a Best Buy.
This is an interesting grouping of products across categories. What they have in common is that they're all things that are very commonly found on wish lists on Amazon.com. So as an extension of our online partner, we are trying to bring in that shopping experience right here into the store. And that's the one way we know people like to shop. What's on a wish list?
Totally. I am so excited about this. I go to their Amazon Go stores pretty frequently because there's two of them fairly close to where I live. And the technology is not the same at these stores. You still have to pay via credit card or your Amazon account. But it's not in the Amazon stores, you can just pick up a bottle of Coke Zero or whatever and walk out and it automatically charges you and on your account. That's not what's happening here yet, but I'm assuming that's coming up next. And when that does happen, just count a lot of jobs goodbye. As the unions have been fighting to make sure you get paid $1,000 an hour, they're the ones who are automating all of this and making it so that it's so much easier for everybody else.
Damn unions.
You looking for work? I can hook you up at Amazon while they're developing before they go fully automated.
Well, they probably pay better. No.
Oh, I don't get paid much. Oh, you yell at me all day. Oh, you charge me to buy pens in the office when I have to write notes. It's normal.
That's not normal.
That's totally normal.
No, everyone here says that's not normal.
Well, it is. Oh, the pens are $2.99. Well, why don't you stop losing so many? How about that?
I just want to know, producer Darren has been sneaking me pens. So
why would you throw him under the bus like that?
I don't know what happens
to employees that do that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Get the paddle off the wall. You know the drill. Yeah.
On it.
You're listening to the Jason Rancher. Coming up next, Brandi Cruz from Q13. We're going to talk about Seattle policing, media bias, and sanctuary state policies. You've been listening to What's Trending. It's brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Some exciting news for a personal friend and a friend of the show. Brandi Cruz has a brand new show. It premieres on Sunday at 9 a.m. right after Fox News Sunday. It's called The Divide on Q13 Fox. And I know she's got some very special guests, one in particular that we should talk about at some point. Welcome to the studio, Brandi Cruz.
So good to be here.
My rumored longtime girlfriend.
Still when you Google Brandi Cruz husband, a picture of us pops up.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. We're not, in fact, in any sort of relationship beyond friendship.
Yes.
So first, as a friend and colleague, congratulations on a brand new show.
Thank you. You beat me to it, but it took me a little bit, but we're excited about it. You know, we've been doing the commentary, The Divide, for 2 years. So when people hear, well, haven't you already been doing that? It's just expanding the concept of the commentary we've been doing for so long, which is exciting because that commentary debuted on Facebook. It wasn't even on our air.
Yeah.
So it's come a long way and we're excited with the final product.
The whole idea of the commentary is to bring all sides of generally controversial topics together, hoping to find some kind of common ground or, frankly, just call out the nonsense.
Right. You summed it up perfectly, because sometimes you can't find common ground. I mean, let's just be really realistic. Sometimes with issues that are controversial, people fall into different sides because of their values, because of their experiences, and you're not going to be able to move them. So it's at least maybe finding a way where we can improve the conversation that we're having, or else calling out nonsense where, look, you might feel a certain way about this story, but you have to agree that this is BS, and you know, in regardless of your politics, we all should be able to agree on that.
Well, on Sunday at 9 a.m., you're starting with the totally not at all controversial topic of immigration.
Yeah, sanctuary policies, to be specific. Because, look, this is one of those things, when we say, oh, we're going to find common ground every week, look, there are some times where we're not. We're just not. And this Sunday is going to be an example of that, where you have people who are so ingrained on either side of the issue, they have a hard time listening to the arguments made by the other side without painting them in some certain way. So one of the things that we're trying to accomplish with the show on Sunday is to change the way that people talk about it. You know, think really hard about the words that you're using, because when we use these just kind of stinging words, what it does is it allows the other side just to dismiss you completely out of hand, because I'm not going to listen to you. Because, well, so there's, I think, you know, invasion has been one that we've been discussing, that's been referenced about the president. There's always a debate over, do you call someone illegal or do you call them undocumented? And we're not telling people how they should talk. You know, you talk about the issue how you want to talk about the issue, but we are going to discuss, look, if you just tweak the way you talk about it, would you have a more productive conversation about the problem? Could you actually then focus on having important policy discussions about immigration and get somewhere on it, as opposed to being completely shut down and dismissed immediately?
Well, isn't the truth is, I mean, look, with good faith actors and all of this, the answer to that question is, I suppose, yes. But I generally think the people who are saying no one is illegal, no human being is they're not interested in any conversation. That's all about showing how heroic they are for taking this very moral stance that isn't necessarily backed by any sort of facts. It's just their feelings on the topic.
Well, on the other side has people who say things that, you know, aren't backed by any fact. And I think that's the purpose of this, is pointing out some of the things that both sides are doing that if they were able to find it in themselves to stop it and really sit and think and be self-aware and want to have, you have to want to have those conversations. And that's not easy. I still do this stuff all the time. I literally am getting a show on Sunday that's about not being divisive. And sometimes I find myself being divisive. I'll tweet out something and I'll be like, that is literally the opposite of what you're trying to accomplish on your own show. So this is something that it takes effort every day.
Yeah.
And it's not easy and it's annoying. But I really believe that the people who are going to be watching this show are the people who do want to improve discourse and are willing to make those changes.
So The Divide premieres Sunday at 9 a.m. on Q13 Fox, right after Fox News Sunday. So you've got a nice lead in to certainly get the mood set as far as what you're going to talk
yes,
about.
Thank you, Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace, don't bring me down.
He's not going to bring you down.
No,
I think he's going to pump you up.
Exactly.
So yeah, speaking of, you know, some of your favorite guests, you know, you're obviously, I'm appearing on the show next Sunday.
Not next
or
Sunday,
two
but
Sundays
soon.
From now. Yeah,
soon. We are going to be discussing, we booked you to talk about the press. Media bias. And look, this is something that I think that we have done with this show that other mainstream media outlets are not doing. We cannot fail to acknowledge the changing perceptions of the press that people have, if we fail to acknowledge that people are viewing us differently, that they're having a hard time trusting us, we're going to fail.
Well, and not reacting by saying there's no truth whatsoever mm-hmm. to media bias. There's clearly media bias. There's media bias every single day. You have bias. I have bias. We try to do our best to mitigate it as best as humanly possible. We're human beings. We have personal views.
Well, and that's exactly it. If any reporter ever tells you they don't have a bias, they are lying.
Yeah, they're literally lying.
Literally lying. The question is whether you can first acknowledge what your bias is and then try to think hard about how it shapes your reporting if you are supposed to be a non-biased reporter. I mean, you have a talk show, clearly.
I'm supposed to be biased.
You're supposed to be biased and let those things show. But yes, that's important. And I think the other thing is just making sure that the press isn't stoking division.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important part of our show as well, because, I mean, you watch cable news and you've got panels of people screaming at each other. What purpose does that serve? Because I'm not getting any information from you from this panel. And so I think as the media, we really need to consider honestly the role that we play. And so I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you, because I think you've made a lot of good points about the press. And so the goal is to have, and C.R. Douglas, our political analyst, is going to be there as well to sort of maybe defend the sanctity mm-hmm. of the media, but maybe he'll agree with you on some points as well.
There is this, we're sort of coloring outside of the lines when we're talking about this in a way, in that I don't like it when we pretend that analysts are journalists. They are not. They are providing analysis. That is their job. And that means they are going to take a stand one way or another, whether it's very overt or whether it's subtle. And I think even for you, when you give commentary, you do get into the position of, I'm not solely a journalist here.
Right. And that's why it's important for two things: for media organizations to make it clear what the audience is seeing or hearing. So when I do my commentaries on Sunday, it has a big old banner that says commentary. And then, you know, when you watch the national news, you as a viewer need to be clear, like, what is this person's role? This person does analysis. They are an analyst. They are not going to be non-biased. I think there are some people who have so many different voices and heads on some of these network news stations. I think it's hard for some people to differentiate. But I also think that it's difficult when you have an organization like CNN or like Fox, where you have people who are strictly an opinion show. That is literally their job. And then that kind of muddies the true journalists that work for both CNN and Fox, who are trying to do straightforward reporting, but maybe the perception the public has of their reporting is colored by show X or show Y.
And there's sometimes it's colored by mistakes that happen beyond them. But Q13, we talked about this a few months ago. Q13 had an issue of mocking Trump. It wasn't done institutionally. There wasn't any sort of mandate to do it. You guys handled it, I thought, really well when it was very obvious what had happened. Internally, you did it because it's important to be honest to the audience.
Yeah, there are some times where you cannot stop the actions of an individual. I mean, you could get on the radio and go on, you know, some crazy rant.
I do that all the time.
That the company doesn't like. And at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't look good for them. But you can't stop the actions of an individual sometimes in a newsroom who's bent on doing something they shouldn't. All you can do is, one, you know, admit that you were wrong and quickly and swiftly address the issue.
Q13 Fox, Sunday, 9 a.m. Brandi Cruz is the host of a brand new show. It's called The Divide. You should 100% check it out. I'm always a fan of everything Brandi does. And that's
everything?
I mean, we're friends, so I get to call you out when you do things
I
don't like.
And I call you out. We do it vice versa. We're very honest with each other.
Yeah, and I kind of like that. And I feel like most people would be better off having that kind of relationship. I don't take personally when you disagree with me politically. You've told me when you disagreed with me politically. I've told you the same exact thing. And yet none of us take it personally.
No, we're
and I
still
feel like
friends.
We've kind of lost that in a lot of ways. And I think I don't want to say it's unique to Seattle, but it does seem unique to one particular ideology in major cities. And it's just, I don't know that many conservatives here, for example, like, I'm not going to be friends with that person because they're a hardcore progressive. Now, maybe it's because we have so few of us here that we can't really get away with doing that. But I do see a lot more of the, I'm just not going to associate with that person because he or she happens to be a conservative.
Yeah, that mentality always surprised me. Look, I get if somebody's beliefs are so counter to yours that it makes you question their moral character and you don't want to be friends with them for that reason, then fine, don't be friends with them. But you and I will always be friends. And when I don't like something, I'll drop a DM in your inbox, which is usually what I do.
Yeah, I know when I'm in trouble when I get a DM or a text from Brandi. I'm like, oh, God,
it usually is Jason dot dot dot.
It's always that. And this is legitimately how Jason dot dot dot. And I'm waiting. and I'm seeing her typing something, and I'm knowing what's coming, and then it comes, and then I passive-aggressively snipe back, and then we move on.
And then we move on.
So what can we expect long-term for the device?
Well, look, we're going to be tackling a lot of controversial issues, and we're going to be taking audience feedback into consideration every week as we reevaluate our show. It's interactive. I answer your questions, your criticisms, maybe if you want to say anything nice. I could put that on TV.
Oh, no. Why don't you just smile that's a little bit more, Brandy?
I'm trying. I'm working on it. But, yeah, it could be an evolving show because we are considering the public's reaction to it, what they want to see more of and less of. And, look, I hope that we can. I hope all it does, all I hope for the show is that it changes, it makes people more conscious of the conversations they're having, of the language they use. And someone out there can take off their political cap for a moment and listen to someone else's argument in good faith. That's all I want.
So we have just a couple minutes left. Let's talk about a story that you covered this week on Q13. Carmen Best, chief of the Seattle Police Department. She's come out in a slightly more aggressive way, certainly than we've seen her in the past, flat out saying, you know, some of the problems we're having with staffing situations, a story, by the way, that I was reminded by the stranger multiple times my story was wrong, but now all of a sudden they're actually using the term mass exodus. They're saying this is due to the politics of the council. And I mean, let's be clear. It's Shama Sawant who's the leader of this.
I laughed at this so hard because you totally had this story such a long time ago. I think the stranger called it stupid or something.
They said it was stupid and it was completely wrong.
Yeah, and then you have the chief that comes out and literally says what's in your reporting from like a year and a half earlier. So after she had come out with that initial statement against the council, which is so rare for a police chief to do because you want to kind of
and especially
keep
her,
peace.
Because even during the time when she was pushing the new contract, she was still playing it relatively safe and not going too hard in her criticisms.
Yeah, she wanted to keep the peace, but I think that speaks volumes about how bad things have become if she's willing to come out and take that stance. So after she made that statement, I spent 6 hours with Police Chief Carmen Best, my team and I did. We went to her, she was giving a speech at the Naval Base, or the Coast Guard Base. She was doing some other things. We sat down for about an hour and talked about some of these issues. She was more agitated than I have ever seen her on an issue. When she talked about, she was directing this at Lorena Gonzalez, mm-hmm. who dismissed 72 exit interviews from police officers as being just a small fraction of the entire force.
Lorena Gonzalez has no idea what she's talking about on this issue.
I'll just say on this issue, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, factually, that doesn't make any sense because you're talking about the segment that's leaving. That's the only segment you need to hear from. And Chief Best really just went off about how much that didn't make sense and how you can't care about public safety, but also, you know, not support officers in this way. And I'll tell you this, and I'm still doing my commentary as part of the Divide mm-hmm. show. I'll end it every week. And this week, we're talking about this very issue. And, you know, I look at what happened in Philadelphia with those police officers. Thank God they're alive. But then, you know, whenever something like that happens, you got politicians come out, oh, officers, they're heroes, you know, they do such good work. I hope nothing ever happens again to an officer in this city. But I don't want to hear these same city council members come out and say, oh, we've got your back, because at that point, it's too late. At that point, it's too late. And so, this is an interesting issue. And I think at the heart of it is public safety. And if you don't care about anything else, you should at least care about public safety.
Well, I look forward to The Divide, this commentary happening this Sunday on the show every single Sunday morning, 9 a.m. on Q13 Fox, right after Fox News Sunday.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I am pumped. That's Brandy Cruz. Thanks for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. Two quick updates on stories that we've been talking about for a bit now. Joey Gibson has been on the show before. He's the leader of the group Patriot Prayer, which is a right-wing group out of Vancouver, but they do a lot of their activism in Portland. And every once in a while, they come up here to the Seattle area. He turned himself in to jail today in connection with charges linked to a May Day riot of sorts outside of a bar in Portland. Before entering the detention center, he had a news conference in which he pointed out that he is being persecuted basically for his beliefs, that he is being unfairly targeted, and he's saying he is innocent of the charges of inciting or engaging in any violence outside of the bar. It's called Cider Riot. Now, this is Portland, where he has been a routine target of government non-interference, meaning they kind of let Antifa do whatever it is they want. Antifa, on video, is seen committing acts of violence, targeting individuals like they did Andy Ngo. the people who did that still haven't been arrested, but now Joey Gibson has turned himself in. He said, in fact, he was the one who was assaulted numerous times, and he believes that this is an attack on his First Amendment. Now, we'll see where this ends up going. I've made this point to Joey when he's been on the show in the past, and I've certainly made this point when speaking about the Proud Boys here in Western Washington. They do seem eager to get into fights. I've not actually seen them instigate the fight physically, but it does seem very clear that they're willing to fight if they are attacked. And yes, they are attacked first in these cases, but when you're egging it on, I don't think you can say you're completely innocent in all of this. And I'm not speaking specifically of Joey Gibson. In fact, all the stuff I've seen, people tell me that he's a white supremacist Nazi. And yet when I ask them specifically to give me any quote of something he said, because I don't want to have Nazis on my show, nor do I want to promote anything that they do, right? And not that we promoted him specifically, but he's been on the show. I ask for direct quotes. No one's able to give them to me. I've yet to hear that. Now, I don't know all the details in this particular case. If he, in fact, instigated a riot, he should be punished the same way anyone on Antifa's side should be punished. The difference is they literally never go after Antifa. This weekend, there's going to be a whole bunch of potential riots all across downtown Portland because of these planned demonstrations by both Patriot Prayer or the right-wing side of things and Antifa and the hardcore left-wing side of things. I guarantee you, you're not going to see a lot of pushback on Antifa. Cops will get involved a little bit more than they have in the past because of how high profile these protests are supposed to be tomorrow. But I anticipate, yet again, we give a pass to Antifa because folks in Portland, they generally side with that progressive thinking. And then finally, a tweet just came across my feed from President Trump literally 7 minutes ago, 8 minutes ago. It's about Representative Tlaib and her asking Israel to grant her permission so she can visit her grandmother on in the West Bank. They said yes. Then she came back and said, no, actually, I will not be allowed to be used to support this oppressive blah, blah, blah. She's an anti-Semite and she was setting up Israel. President Trump just offered the sickest burn I think I've ever seen from anyone, period. The kids still say that, right? Sick burn? He writes, Representative Tlaib wrote a letter to Israeli officials desperately wanting to visit her grandmother. Permission was quickly granted, whereupon Tlaib obnoxiously turned the approval down, a complete setup. The only real winner here is Talib's grandmother. She doesn't have to see her now.
Ooh.
Oh!
Jeez, brutal.
Oh! Come on, that's a good burn.
That's brutal.
That's a really good burn. That's one of those burns where I'm all like, oh, that I had that in me. I so wish I was able to put it out on Twitter beforehand. Kudos to the president on this. Total kudos to him. Oh, my gosh. That's a sick burn. Good for him. Normally, I don't like tweets like that from a president or any politician, but in cases of going after virulent anti-Semites, I give him a pass.
It comes with President Trump.
It does. I don't always like it. This case, I really like it because Representative Tlaib's an anti-Semite. I'll be on Q13 Fox tonight at 8:30 if you want to see me debate with our colleague over at our sister station, Dave Ross. We're going to be talking about all the news of the day. But first, we still got 2 more hours of this show to go. Right here on AM 770 KTTH.